Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check. Testing, 1, 2, 3. Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check.
Welcome to the Quick Restart. We cover 73 Division I men's lacrosse teams.
And we do it fast.
Hello and welcome back to the Quick Restart podcast. I'm Terry Foy. Playing hurt today, Quint. I'm under the weather, as you can probably tell by the sound of my voice. And as you and I record, Jeff Tamroni's Nittany Lions have completed a 13-8 victory over the Ohio State Buckeyes to hold on to their number one hold in the college lacrosse rankings, the Inside Lacrosse Media Poll. It was an impressive performance from the Nittany Lions that I think kind of really shed a spotlight on what it is that's impressive about this group. And it's that they can win in all three phases of the game: offense, defense, and special teams. I don't want to spend a ton of time talking about the Nittany Lions because we have so far this season, but obviously they're the number one team in the country and they just added a quality win to their resume. What do you say about Penn State?
I really enjoyed the game. Number one thing, you know, there was a nice crowd there on a rainy Sunday night. A little home court advantage for the first time I've ever seen. So it's about time that the fans in Happy Valley starting to recognize what they have. Justin Inacio from Ohio State did a terrific job against Gerard Arceri. But otherwise, I liked Penn State in the middle of the field. That was an area of weakness last year. The offense is beyond legit. You know, Grant Amant, I was a little upset the way Ohio State played the first half, honestly. I thought they gave Amant a little too much space to feed. They gave him his hands free. And then they got sloppy with Mac O'Keefe in the slot area. He's a guy that demands a face guard, okay? In my poll this week that you can read on Monday at Inside Lacrosse, I'll talk about a scouting report against Penn State. There's two things you have to do on defense. One is limit Grant Amant's touches, push him out on the perimeter so his feeds are longer, treat him like a feeder, get on his hands. Two is face guard Mac O'Keefe at all times, anywhere in the paint, anywhere near the hash marks. He's got to be covered. Three, you let the other guys beat you and score on assisted goals. Okay, this is a team scoring 18 per game. How much did they hit against Ohio State, 13 or 14? Yep. That's a little below par for them. And I think if you clean that up, you can get that number down to 10, 11, or 12 with the right game plan. Okay, there's enough tape out on these guys now that you got to start to use your brains and incorporate what your coaches are telling you. Make the middies score on assisted goals. Take Amant out as a feeder. If he wants to go to the rack for himself, fine. And Mac O'Keefe is purely a spectator, and I'm going to play a five-man defense.
Along those lines, one of the guys who I'm most fascinated in your scouting report on is Nick Spillane.
Yeah, well, the two guys, the Willard kid and Spillane, were had nice games tonight. And that's going to be where this team's going to have to go long term if they're going to win and play championship weekend caliber lacrosse. Because I don't think it can just be a 1-2 punch when you're dealing with really good defenses who are able to incorporate scouting reports. And it had to be frustrating to be on the Buckeye sideline, because I know Nick Myers has the same view of Penn State probably that I do. You know, their assisted goal totals are so high that you got to make them score off the dribble, score off the dodge. So, quite frankly, though, I was more impressed with Ohio State in this loss than I have been all season, even during some of their wins, and of course last week in their atrocious performance against Rutgers. The biggest snafu with them is their love of the outside shot, and you saw that in the first half. They had tons of shots, but how many were really good shots? They don't have great dodgers. Obviously, LeClaire can bomb from the outside. Jasinski, they need picks. They're a little young on attack. I was impressed, though. I like their compete level. I like their Inacio was terrific. Tarasenko was terrific. They're a good team. They look like a playoff team to me tonight for the first time this year. This was, in my eyes, maybe their best game, not the best result, but they showed me more tonight in a loss than I've seen from them all season long.
Amant finished with 2 goals and 6 assists. Let's go ahead and hear from Happy Valley.
You know, I thought we weathered the storm early and then just continued to keep grinding. You know, longer possessions defensively. We stayed the course, and I thought for the most part we're very disciplined. And then on the flip side, I thought with very few possessions offensively, the guys just stayed the course. They didn't get impatient. Continued to keep sharing the ball, and then finally things broke somewhere about the middle of the fourth quarter. So I think patience was a big piece of our success tonight. That we remained disciplined against a team that had a really good plan out here. So I thought those guys just stayed the course. It was nice to have him back. We got him back for one practice this week. So it was nice just in terms of the overall chemistry or momentum of our offense. That was a huge boost. You know, before Maryland, we didn't have him a day. You could tell that affected both Grant and our offense. But I think that just having him back, he was more confident. I thought the chemistry of our offense in general just seemed to really click tonight with him out there. So he seemed very comfortable in practice later on in the week and seemed very comfortable here tonight, which would obviously be a huge boost for our offense and team.
How, compared to the last time you guys ascended to the number one ranking, how has it been handled by the guys, you know, this time comparatively? Yeah.
I would probably say two things. One, humility. I think these guys have done a much better job of just staying a little bit more humble, coming out to practice every day. And I think we talked to our guys about the actions versus their words. So I thought that's been a big piece. And then maturity. I think these guys have just managed it very well by just focusing on what's important, their practices. Getting better every day has been a big piece. And, I think that those two things have been a big help this time around.
Did you see those qualities tonight from them?
I did, for the most part. This was it was an electric atmosphere and crowd. It's Sunday night. It's here at home. Great student section, great crowd. I could tell they were probably over-amped to come out and play. Like, I was watching warm-ups against Maryland versus tonight Maryland. I thought we were really locked in tonight. I thought we were just a little bit all over the place in terms of our focus, and that was a big key coming in, practice hard, and then just make sure we focus on just the importance of what was going to happen around the field, because we had a feeling that there was going to be a nice crowd supporting them tonight. So I thought we managed it okay early, but I thought as the game went on, it kind of got the normality of the game kind of settled in, and I thought they did a better job as the game went on.
Seems like Cole is starting to break out for you guys. Another big night for you. Last week, he has the goal that stops Maryland's momentum. How do you feel like he's starting to come out for your team and sort of have this role where he just kills the other team's momentum every time they get it going?
Yeah. You know, with Grant not being at his best against Maryland, and tonight without Jack Kelly playing, you know, we've had other guys just have to step up. TJ Malone did a great job, but Cole Willard tonight, it was Jack Traynor, I thought, last week, Cole Willard tonight, both those guys, and then TJ on top of that. Those guys are just doing a really good job of just having some timely goals and opportunities, and I think it's given us a lot more balance, taking a lot of pressure off of our attack, and giving us a little bit more depth like we did against Maryland.
All right, Quint, staying in the Big Ten, a game in which you called Saturday afternoon, Johns Hopkins Blue Jays got out to a big lead and held on to a 15-13 victory over Rutgers on homecoming. This was a game in which Joey Epstein put up 5 goals and 3 assists, Cole Williams 3 goals and 2 assists, and really, when you look at that scoreline, it came down to the offense and their ability to outscore the Scarlet Knights.
Yeah, I was impressed with their start. They're really ready to go. You know, it's hard not to be ready to play emotionally and physically on homecoming day, especially when you're the second game of a doubleheader. The women lost to Northwestern early. Sheen and I had that call, and you know, there's just a buzz on campus. There's a buzz around the building. They were ready to go. And that 6-0 lead early was the head start they needed. Because late, quite honestly, I thought they ran out of gas and were scrambling a bit. But along the way, Cole Williams played his best game of the year. Joey Epstein continues to just dazzle. I'm blown away by his weak angle shooting. You know, when he comes around the net, righty, lefty, the variety that he's throwing. I don't really have a clear scouting report. He's putting the ball in areas that, man, you are lucky to make a save. It's either hitting your toe or maybe you're hitting you in the ear. He's doing a great job there. And then his game away from goal line extended is getting better and better. You know, the one righty rip he had from up top. He's spending a little more time on the wings and floating through the offense a little better. So he, Cole Williams, and Marr played well. The rest of the middies, again, still a huge question mark going forward. There's not much there. And then the defense played a great first 22 minutes and then kind of disappeared in the second half. Now, they don't sub much. You know, Hopkins, when you look at it, they play 23 guys. But in reality, they're throwing the same 6 out there on defense every possession. You know, we saw McManus late in the game come on because I thought Jones and Hubler were getting gassed. Those guys have played a lot of shifts. And ultimately, if the weather heats up, Hopkins is going to have to go a little deeper defensively. But it was a nice win. It was a positive step. And, you know, they'll move up a notch, and that puts more emphasis on the next game. And that's the type of lacrosse Hopkins has got to play right now. You know, it's a one-week season for them, trying to build an at-large resume, trying to get into the Big Ten tournament, and that was a gigantic step forward. So it was a positive. I was a little disappointed with Rutgers. You know, you got to come off the bus with a little more pop. You got to, on the road especially, you got to bring your own juice. You know, or you got to get juice from the crowd somehow, and they were flat, and you fall behind 6-0, you're likely not going to win.
First of all, I think it's a great win. That's a good team. And make no mistake, if you didn't watch them play last week, and how they played on the road, that's a good team. And everybody who's kind of counted us out, and I'm going to tell you, a lot of you have. This team's got a lot of fight, a lot of guts, and a lot of grit. We're far from perfect, and we are very much a work in progress and need to show greater maturity, especially in the fourth quarter. That's been our problem the last 2 weeks. But, you know, we found a way to win. We got goals when we needed to get goals, and quite frankly, we got a stop or two when we needed to get a stop or two. You know, I think, you know, a couple calls went against us, momentum changed, and, you know, for a little while, we couldn't get a handle on it. And that's the way they play. They play in that NASCAR offense where it's go, go, go. You know, and I thought some of our in the first half, our middies did a really good job. And I think in the second half, we didn't do a great job off of conversion. But, you know, they're a very good team. I have a lot of respect for their coaches and them. And that's a really good win for us.
Along those lines, in finishing out the Big Ten picture, the Michigan Wolverines headed to College Park and came home the 16-12 defeat. Logan Wisnauskas and Jared Bernhardt, each with 8 points on 5 goals and 3 assists. It was another really invigorating game day in College Park, in a day in which the Terrapins fed off their fans.
Yeah, 6,000 fans. You know what I'll write about in my poll is this is the time of year, important games, okay, you win, you stay alive. And that goes for really everybody. When you think about it, you got 9 AQs, Terry. 9 times 4 is what, 36. There's 36 teams who are going to be playing elimination lacrosse. But to get to that 36, there's still 50 or 60 teams that still have a chance. So if you start winning games now and you get into your tournament and keep winning, you know, the sky's the limit. So everybody's still alive. And that's what I love about April, plus the weather and now crowds. 6,000 at Maryland. Loyola played in front of a raucous 2,000. Penn State had fans. Hopkins had fans. Next week, Virginia Duke's going to have tons of fans. This weekday game, Cornell-Syracuse, I'm guessing is going to have a good crowd if the weather's okay. Loyola-Georgetown on Tuesday could have a decent crowd. So yeah, this is the type of year you do all the work in January and February. These are the payoff days. These are the payoff games for you as an athlete. People are coming to see you play, and the weather's nice, and you got a chance to shine. This is what it's all about.
So sticking in the ACC, Virginia secured the top seed in the ACC tournament with an 11-10 victory over North Carolina. It was a game in which Dax Akin scored the first goal and the last goal, and in between, Michael Krause, the junior attackman, had 5 goals and an assist. But there were aspects of this game in which I felt like North Carolina outplayed the Wahoos, and yet ultimately it was Lars Tiffany's team that came away out on top. I think for me, the thing that was most impressive is Carolina's diversity of scoring has proven to be a little bit sustainable. They had 11 guys that registered a point in this game, and yet it wasn't enough. And despite the fact that there were aspects of the game in which they, you know, kind of put together a better resume, Petey LaSala had a better day at the faceoff X, and Alex Rode had a better day in goal, and ultimately it amounted to a Virginia win.
Yeah, and give Virginia some credit, okay? They've won a lot of close games this year. You think about this game, they beat overtime over, Brown, close game against Princeton, close game in overtime against Syracuse. So they're winning close games this year. And there was a time in recent history where they lost 18 straight in conference. Okay. Remember when Virginia lost 18 straight ACC games? That's like a whole four-year block. So I give this group a lot of credit for hitting the reset button and coming back. And now they're on top. Okay. A couple concerns. Obviously, defense with this group has been a concern all year. But the lack of scoring depth. Okay, this group is much like Maryland. There's not much coming off the bench, and I know they have good players there, but it seems like every week it's Krause, Moore, Aiken, Laviano. They're going to need a little bit more to win multiple playoff games. Okay, great momentum now. It's an 8-game win streak. They got some issues, you know, going on their bench with Patrick Birkinshaw putting his name in the transfer portal, you know, backup goalie. I'm not sure what that's about. But a trip to Duke is next. That game is Saturday, ESPNU. That'll be a good one. And I actually include North Carolina in my top 20. Again, another team who lost, but they're playing much better lacrosse right now. And the good news for them is they're going to host the 4-versus-5 game and the ACC semis. That's the April 27 and April 25 down at Chapel Hill. So much like 2016, Terry, this team can make a miracle run. They still have life, and what a great time for them to be playing their best ball of the year.
You mentioned Virginia has Duke next. The Blue Devils snapped their 2-game losing streak. First, it was on the road at Syracuse in overtime, and then last week at Chapel Hill, they lost 10-8 to the Tar Heels. On Saturday, they handed the Notre Dame Fighting Irish a 14-8 defeat. It was really a dominant one-sided performance, but for me, it was Nikai Montgomery's 1 goal and 4 assists that looked like a page had been turned in Duke's ability to attack opposing defenses. And if Montgomery is able to find the backside as frequently and efficiently as he did against Notre Dame, look out.
Terry, you have a great eye, because that's really what I wrote. There are two things that stood out from this win. Number one, good coaches find solutions. Okay, your offense is in a 2-game funk. John Danowski moves Brad Smith back to midfield. What that does then, it puts teams in a bind. Do you pull Montgomery? Do you pull Smith? Do you pull them both? Number two, as you said, Nikai Montgomery now, he's a party starter. We know he can dodge and score for himself, but he is becoming an adept passer off the dodge. He had assists. He had hockey assists. And in the end, Duke's defense, they sliced and diced Notre Dame. I watched the highlights today again. Those were layups. I mean, they were shooting from point blank range off of multiple passes. It was the offense that you expect Duke to run. Smith and Montgomery running that first midfield. Lowry now playing attack alongside Robertson. CJ Carpenter coming off the bench. And the defense has been good all along. That hasn't been the issue. So I give Coach Danowski a lot of credit. I expected changes. He made them, and they worked.
For Notre Dame, they haven't won consecutive games since their March 3rd and March 9th victory over Maryland and Denver. You got to feel okay and encouraged in some respect by Connor Morin's performance. He had 4 goals and 2 assists. And Jack Zolo has settled in as a new starter in Cole, having replaced Matthew Schmidt. But beyond that, there are a lot of question marks, and that's crazy for a team that – in Charles Leonard has found a faceoff specialist in the way that I would say this program hadn't had in 10 years. So I guess my question for you is, obviously Notre Dame, their warts are going to be exposed because they play a really tough schedule.
Brutal.
That being said, how good is this team?
Well, they're 5-4, according to my stats.
No, that's right.
And they beat Maryland in the Thunderdome. They beat Denver, Michigan, and Syracuse, and Detroit. Okay, they're 4 losses, Richmond, Virginia, Ohio State, and Duke. Nobody plays the schedule that they play, so they'll be rewarded for that on Selection Sunday. Their issue, though, is maybe 500 is the issue, okay? Because until NC State or Boston College or Florida State add a team, the ACC doesn't have an AQ. So Notre Dame has to get to 500 or better. Now, I think they can do it. I like their Dodgers. I really do. Costabile, Gleason, Connor Morin, and Wheaton Jackaboys. They have more Dodgers in this group than they've ever had. What they're missing right now is an inside presence. And I thought they missed layups and mid-range shots against Duke that had they canned, this game could have had an entirely different complexion. Okay, they only put 17 shots on goal. Their extra man is woeful. They were 0 for 5. They came out ready to play with a 3-1 lead but couldn't follow it up. So there's good, there's bad. They're inconsistent. Win 1 week, lose the next. Their backs are against the wall to a certain degree at 5-4. As I said, they need to be 500.
I don't know how the team felt beforehand, but it was a good, hard week of practice. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you know, we're out for 3 hours. On Thursday, we're out for 2.5 hours. Friday, you know, we're out for an hour and a half. Team meeting Friday night. So we spent a lot of time doing the things that were necessary to prepare. But, you know, I don't know that we expected this result. We'll have to take a look at the film and then, you know, evaluate it, you know, objectively. Well, it was an ACC, you know, win. It's when it's a game at home, you know, you're playing Notre Dame, you know, who's the bastion of college athletics. You know, there's all sorts of reasons, but it's just the next game. And it's good to win, and it's good to play right. I think for the most part, we played correctly, and which we hadn't been doing in the last couple of weeks.
You had some directed, pointed words about, you know, where you thought the team was after last week's loss, and changes potentially that were in the air because you thought some guys were not in positions that would make them successful. I mean, you made some of those changes. Can you talk about those specifically?
Well, you know, I think it was, you know, Matt Danowski, you know, who's really does a lot of our work offensively, you know, felt that, I think we all felt that while Brad, the experiment to play Brad Smith as an attackman was noble, he's more suited to be a midfielder. And but yet you got to need people then, if you're going to move him, you're going to need somebody to move into attack. And so we had really guys kind of shared that playing time, Sean Lowry and C.J. Carpenter, and they both came up with big days. I mean, we got 5-2 out of those two guys, and Brad had 3-2 himself. So for this week anyway, you know, Brad looked much more comfortable. We had 6 goals out of the midfield and then 8 goals out of the attack. So, and that's kind of the balance that you're looking for.
Individually, Nekai had, you know, some great goals last week, but he had a vision today, it looked like, and putting the ball in guys' crosses that, you know, really left the Notre Dame defense a little bit handcuffed, it looked like.
It was things that we had practiced during the week, not necessarily, you know, for Notre Dame, but just general lacrosse IQ, where, you know, we want to throw the ball inside or throw the ball to the pipe or throw the ball. And it's something that we worked on every day in, you know, pre-practice and skeleton drills and live drills. And it was something that we hope to continue, obviously, as our IQ grows.
Quint, last week I felt invigorated by the point I made about Villanova Wildcats' resume.
Yeah, I give you credit.
They turned around and handed the Denver Pioneers a 12-11 loss at Peter Barton Stadium. It is the first regular season Biggie East loss that Denver has ever suffered. And obviously you can look at the scoring stats, but for me, the biggest determining factor in this outcome, Villanova goalie Will Vinton made 19 saves, and as has been a theme for the Pioneers, Alex Reddy made just 5 saves as Denver fell by a score of 12-11.
Villanova now, I have it 13, okay? Because their resume, as you said last week, and I should quote you, but I won't. Their resume is stronger than you may realize. Wins over Yale, Hofstra, Delaware at 9-2. Okay, they're going to have a great RPI because of that. Fairfield Brown still in the hunt in the Ivy League. Marquette making strides in the Big East. And now Denver. Losses, really good 3 losses. Penn State, Penn, Maryland. The one bad loss is Drexel. So once again, Villanova playing the RPI system. They're playing the selection committee like they did last year. And they're very much in the hunt. Denver, on the other hand, I just don't see as an at-large. Do you see Denver as an at-large?
I don't.
Wins over North Carolina, Towson, and Georgetown. Losses to Duke, Notre Dame, Princeton, and Nova. I just don't see that there's enough there.
The real question in that resume for me is whether or not Princeton's going to above that RPI number 30 threshold and whether they count as a bad loss. Because if they do count as bad loss, it's hard for me to see the 3-4 quality wins that they're going to need in order to have that bolstered at large resume. That being said, I wouldn't bet on any team to win the Big East at this point. And so as a result, their path to the NCAA tournament is as open as anybody else's.
Yeah, they're 6-4, but remember that Ohio State game that was canceled, that may ultimately haunt them in an at-large bid come Selection Sunday.
Sticking in the Big East, Marquette, 12-8 victors over St. John. That was a little bit touch and go for a while. Georgetown, 17-15 winners over Providence. And the Hoyas, as you mentioned, have a midweek game against Loyola, who is coming off of a 15-9 victory over Lehigh. The Greyhounds built a 9-0 first half lead. Pat Spencer finished with 11 points. He's got 21 points in his last two games. He's just playing a different sport from everybody else at this point. It's outrageous.
Okay, yeah, Georgetown plays Loyola and then Nova next weekend. Loyola, I put him on upset alert. How funny is that? On Saturday morning, Sheehan and I were calling the Northwestern Hopkins game. Like, you know, I'm sniffing some upsets this weekend. I was thinking Lehigh's got a shot because of their face-off man, Connor Gaffney. Well, some shot, 9-0 before the teams got off the bus. Spencer, if you haven't had a chance, folks, to watch the highlights for what he did, the one goal on the wing, I when I first saw it, I'm like, who is that guy from Loyola? It did not look like Pat Spencer. It was a move he has never done. It was a spin and a certain quickness, and the release quickness on that move from the wing out of the spin was so amazingly good that I was like, holy mackerel. This kid goes viral every week, and he's super fun to watch. They play Georgetown Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, CBS Sports Network. So if you haven't gotten a chance to watch Pat Spencer play, folks, please do. If you're an offensive player, if you're a parent of an offensive player, there's so much you can learn from watching his greatness. He had 11 points, and Loyola, you know, delivered the hammer in the conference, the Patriot League now. If Loyola takes that league, I don't see another team as a viable at-large candidate. Could be a one-bid league.
Well, let's go ahead and hear from the action at the Ridley Athletic Complex. Matt Kinnear was on hand and had a lot to say about the quality of the home crowd.
Not only was it senior day, but it was an electric environment. And I just want to thank our students for coming out and really making it a tough place to play for our opponent. We felt it. We felt the energy. And I thought in the first quarter, we probably played with great energy. You know, hats off to Lehigh. You know, our guys were ready to play today. And, you know, they kept battling, and we know what that program's about. It's tough to see any young man go down on the field, whether or not it's your man and or theirs. So our thoughts and prayers are with him going forward. But I'm just proud of our effort today. I thought we shared the ball offensively. I thought that we played good, solid defense. We'll talk a little bit about the fouls at the end. We'll work on that. That's something we can improve on. But a great effort, and we knew we were going to get one on senior day for the guys. Like I said, just very proud at the moment. I certainly hope not. I hope there's more out there. But I will say this: I think that we're getting healthy at the right time, both offensively and defensively. And so, you know, our practices have been better. They've been more competitive as guys. We're not sitting them out as much. I think it's starting to show. I think everybody looks a little bit better when it's 65 degrees out. You know, you can take that extra layer off that's underneath you, and certainly Loyola's a little bit better in that environment too. I know one guy down at the end loves warm weather. And, you know, I think there's good lacrosse, hopefully, you know, out there for all of us to improve on and keep getting better. But I like the way that this team's playing, absolutely.
Sticking with Loyola, Quinn, Boston University is 8-4, coming off of a 15-13 win over Army. They're a really interesting team when you look at their season-long resume. They beat Providence to open the year, lost to Ohio State, and then won four straight. They were 5-1, and now they've traded wins and losses over the course of the last 4 or 5 weeks. And they are 8-4. Terriers feature one of the best players in college lacrosse in Chris Gray. He's got 76 points on the season.
76, yeah.
It's just a really nice showing from Coach Ryan Pauley's team, particularly coming off of a win over Army that is going to have a lot of value.
I know, you know, I kept Army in my top 20 at number 18. I got BU probably 21 or 22. I probably should switch that based on recency, because Army doesn't have an at-large worthy resume. And to lead that game 8-4 at halftime at home and then to lose it says a lot about BU. Chris Gray, 5 points in 11 straight games, okay? This is against defenses who know what they're dealing with. They're prepared to stop him, and nobody can. He's the second-best player in the Patriot League right now. And BU is going to try to make a run. It's very interesting because there's Loyola and then kind of everybody else fighting for slots in that tournament.
So across the rest of the college lacrosse landscape, a couple teams that you and I have spoken about a few times on this podcast over the course of this season, the Southern Conference appears as if it's shaping up between High Point and Richmond. Richmond coming off of a 14-8 victory over Jacksonville. High Point, the Panthers, beat Air Force 13-9 this weekend.
Yeah, High Point, Chris Young continues to deliver 36 goals. He's shooting 64%. Asher Nolting, obviously his setup man. Those two teams will play April 27, High Point and Richmond. So that's a couple weeks away. And you know, Richmond, they're 4-0, so they're on top of the standings right now, 4-0 in the SoCon.
In the NEC, Mount St. Mary's is 7-5. They have won 7 of their last 8 games. The lone loss in that stretch at Johns Hopkins, a game that you called their gauntlet, represents itself right now at Wagner, at Hobart, hosting St. Joe's. They're coming off of a come from behind win over Utah. I'm telling you, keep an eye on the Mount. They're going to be a player, and right now they would be my pick to win the NEC.
I rewarded them with a 20th spot in my poll, okay? They were 0-4. As you said, they've won 7 of 8. They beat Utah, Sacred Heart, Robert Morris, Bryant, and Richmond. Mount St. Mary's beat Richmond, folks. If you missed our podcast last week, there was a midweek game earlier in this year, I think, that slipped through the cracks. They sit atop the standings. They were actually in the game with Hopkins, and had they converted on a couple fast breaks early, I think they could have taken the game into the second half and made it really interesting. They didn't, and Hopkins asserted themselves. But the Mount, much improved. Coach Tom Gravani and that group deserve a lot of credit. Let's see if they can sustain right now, because it's one thing to be ahead on April 8th. It's another to be ahead on May 5th.
In the America East, the Vermont Catamounts coming off of a 10-9 victory over Albany. They're 3-1 in the league, as are the Great Danes, which obviously means that the Catamounts hold the tiebreaker relative to hosting the conference tournament. The Chris Fife's team has 3 games remaining at Binghamton and then at home against Stony Brook. Those are their 2 conference games. Then they host Penn in the last week of the regular season. Vermont very much in the driver's seat to host the America East tournament.
High seed hosts. That means Albany may have to go on the road. Both teams are 3-1. You know, Albany is defies explanation with the way they're losing some of these ball games this year.
Yeah, there's no better way to describe it. They defy explanation.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the CAA, where to me the biggest result was Hofstra's 10-9 overtime victory versus UMass. Towson, 14-7 victors over Fairfield. They've got their future in front of them. They host the Minutemen this week.
One thing about the CAA that people need to understand is how much of a dogfight this league is, okay? Because when teams like Drexel, who may be in last place in the league, Hofstra fighting for a share, Delaware trying to make a name for themselves, there's such hunger in this conference. And all these games have to be looked at on an island, you know, like past records, where you are this year, it doesn't matter. Like, these are CAA dogfights, okay? And I have a lot of respect for this league. Ryan Tierney, the more tape I watched him I sent actually Seth a text earlier this week because I was watching Hofstra play. Who did I cover this weekend? I covered Rutgers.
Yes.
So I think I was watching Hofstra Rutgers. And that kid can shoot, man. Ryan Tierney can shoot it like Kyle Marr and he are like, they look like brothers. And Ryan Brown is like a cousin. I mean, it was funny because there was a picture on Instagram of Ryan, and I said, you know, Hoff Lacks 13 can really shoot it, because Seth's license plate of his Starion sports car in college was Hop Lax 13. So it's like an insider joke between me and Seth, you know, calling him Hop Lax, not Hop Lax 13. And someone on Instagram said, you know, that's the coach's son. do I know that's the coach's son? Yeah, I do know that's the coach's son, and the kid can light it up. So that was interesting. UMass is still a top 15 team. They got to figure out what's going on with their midfield. Delaware's 9-2, 2-0 in the league. The Hens, what's changed for them? Look at it. They're scoring goals all of a sudden. They scored 46 goals in their last three games on the road. Michigan, Fairfield, Drexel, and a gauntlet awaits the Blue Hens. They play Hofstra, Towson, and UMass. So there you go. I mean, we talk about playoff lacrosse, and it really starts now.
They've got it all laid out in front of them. Penn, in the meantime, they've kind of done the work they needed to. It almost feels as if the hay is in the barn for Mike Murphy's squad. They started 0-3. You aptly said at the time, they're the best 0-3 team in college lacrosse with losses to Maryland, Duke, and Penn State. They have since reeled off six straight wins, second longest streak in college lacrosse, I believe, trailing only Virginia. And they come off of a 16-9 win at Brown. They're 4-0 in the Ivy League. And with only Harvard and Dartmouth remaining, they will be favorites to be 6-0, the number one seed in the Ivy League tournament. They end their season with a non-conference game against Vermont. Look out for the Quakers, because it's all laid out in front of them.
It is. You know, they've clinched a berth Ivy League tournament. It's May 3rd and 5th, New York City, Columbia. So they'll be there. They were there last year. They didn't play as well. I expect this team to be much more capable. They took 61 shots. They're playing a nice brand of ball, just pressure, pressure, pressure. Sam Handley, 6 points. Simon Mathias has been around forever. Tyler Dunn's a really nice, good-looking middie. And Reed Junkins, a proven goalie. The kid's been around for longer than us. So I got Penn at 6. And as you said, the hay may be in the barn in terms of at large, and strength of schedule is super tough. So, you know, they got to be in the mix in all bracketologies.
Quint, anything else that we didn't cover that stands out to you?
Yale took 82 shots.
Are you serious? Dartmouth.
What? Yeah, that's what Yale took 82 shots. I was upset that they only scored 20 goals and they gave up 8. How do you take 82 shots and still give up 8 goals? Double check that, because that's what I read.
Wow.
I was impressed with Syracuse blowtorching Hobart on Tuesday. You know, Cornell, Jeff Teat had another big day, and Towson limited their turnovers in their win over Fairfield. You know, Towson's been the turnover kings. They did a better job in that regard. So that's, I think that's about it. I think that covers the whole gauntlet.
Don't sleep on Canisius beating Quinnipiac. That is a meaningful result in the MAC. Maction, it's going to be awesome. It always is.
Couple great TV games coming up this weekend. We got Duke and Virginia, and then Sunday you got Ohio State, Johns Hopkins. CBS and BTN also doing a wonderful job. This is a great time of year. Go to a game. Bring a coworker. Bring a neighbor. Bring one of your sons or daughter's friends. This is the time you want to go out and support these games. The weather's nice. The experience is tremendous. Afterwards, walk down to the field and get an autograph. Say hi to the players. Everyone's accessible. You will have a great time. Just don't sit behind the goal.
All right, that'll do it for this edition of the Quick Restart Podcast. I am Terry Foy. He is at Quint Kesnick. Follow us at Terrence Foy, at Q Kesnick on Twitter. If you like what you heard, tell a friend, leave a rating and a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, and resubscribe, and we'll be back next week.
Poke check, rap check, back check, slap check, testing 1, 2, 3, poke check, rap check, back check, slap check.
Welcome to the Quick Restart. We cover 73 Division I men's lacrosse teams.
And we do it fast.